Stop the presses. The Campbell's Soup Company has announced it has broke ranks with the Grocery Manufacturers Association to back the establishment of a federal GMO labeling standard. This major defection in the ranks of America's food manufacturers leads us to ask, will you buy Campbell's GMO labeled soups?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 1041st edition of the Food Chain Radio program. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends way down there in Santiago who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with engineer Jason Struby on the boards. Jason.
My pleasure, sir.
Hey, let me ask you this. Are you going to buy Campbell's soup that has a label that says contains GMOs?
Most definitely not, actually. I'm GMO free.
You're GMO
free. For life.
Okay, there
most
you go.
Definitely.
Producer Dylan, what about you?
Seeing as I'm a poor college student, I don't think it's going to stop me from buying Campbell's soup.
Okay, doesn't matter to you. You're going to go with the least expensive brand because you're a poor college student, and that's what we eat when we're poor college students.
That about sums it up.
Okay, fair enough. Folks, soup this good just has to be labeled, contains GMOs. During the past several years, food manufacturers like Pepsi, General Mills, and Campbell's Soup Company, working through industry trade groups like the Grocery Manufacturers Association, have spent upwards of $100 million to defeat GMO labeling initiatives throughout the United States. Imagine the surprise, then, when one of the industry stalwart manufacturers, the Campbell's Soup Company, makers also 17 additional brands like Pepperidge Farm cookies, Prego sauces, and SpaghettiOs, broke ranks to advocate for a mandatory national labeling standard for products containing genetically modified organisms. Furthermore, if a federal labeling standard is established in a reasonable time, Campbell says it will work independently to label its products containing GMOs. Since about three-quarters of Campbell's 17 food brands and hundreds of products contain GMOs, its GMO labels are likely to make a huge statement on the shelves of the nation's grocers. And yet there is no certainty the federal government will require the labeling of GMO foods. In fact, legislation is working its way through Congress called the Safe and Accurate Food Labeling Act that would supersede all state laws and make the labeling of GMOs voluntary throughout the nation. Critics call the legislation what? The Dark Act. This ongoing fight to label or not to label foods containing GMOs leads us to ask today, why has science failed to sell the efficacy of GMOs to the public? Why did Campbell's Soup Company break ranks with an industry opposed to GMO labeling? Why establish a GMO label when foods labeled organic are GMO-free? Why bother? And hey, to all of you out there, will you honor Campbell's transparency and buy its GMO-labeled soups? Or will you thank Campbell's for the transparency and avoid its GMO-labeled soups? Here to help us consider to label or not to label, we have Kelly Damewood, who is a policy director, California Certified Organic Farmers. You want to be about that far away from the mic. There you go. So welcome aboard, Kelly. So pleased to have you here today.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you aboard. California Certified Organic Farmers. What is that?
California Certified Organic Farmers, otherwise known as CCOF, is an organic certifier. We certify over 3,000 operations throughout North America. Everything from seed to product on the shelves that you're buying at the grocery store. We still maintain a strong presence in California, certifying the majority of our membership in California.
So you're like a certifier that was born in California and focused on California, but gee whiz, the demand was so strong. You're now working with organic people all over North America.
Correct. We're seeing tremendous growth and demand for organic and operations looking to go organic.
So, and why are people looking to go organic?
people are continually looking for options that are healthier for their families and healthier for the environment. And organic is the most meaningful label that communicates those benefits to the consumer.
And you're a policy director. What is a policy director for CCOF Direct?
So CCOF is an interesting organic certifier. We have our certification services, but we also have a CCOF trade association, essentially, where we do policy and advocacy work at the federal level on things like the DARC Act, which would address GMO labeling, but also at the California state level as well.
Mm-hmm. So you're not only a certifier, but you're a lobbyist.
Not a lobbyist, but we do go out and represent our membership and do advocacy, whether it's grassroots meeting with helping our farmers meet with their representatives or weighing in on public comment periods. If there's a rule or law or regulation that may impact organic farming or food production.
Mm-hmm. And as we speak, you're working to change California's organic laws, which is a major feat if it could be done. Why are you doing that? What are we going to change?
Right. So we're working with Central Coast Assemblymember Mark Stone to update California's state organic law. The law that's in place right now still imposes outdated fees and registration requirements on California's organic producers.
So you're going to streamline things, make it easier for farmers?
Right. We're trying to level the national playing field to make sure that organic producers in California are receiving and paying the same dues that organic producers elsewhere are.
Mm-hmm. Good. And we always like to ask our guests who pays the way. So who pays the way for CCOF?
Who pays the way for CCOF? Mm-hmm. So CCOF is a certification service. So organic businesses pay certification fees to CCOF.
Okay, so if you want to be certified, you have to have somebody certify you, and that's who pays your way then?
Correct.
Good. Yeah. So I'd like to start off today's discussion by two big things I see happening in the world of GMO labeling. One of them, of course, is the Safe and Accurate Food Labeling Law, which, of course, some call the DARC Act. And the other thing is the what I see as a major capitulation by the Campbell Soup Company going against its industry trade group, the Grocery Manufacturers Association, and saying, the heck with it all, let's just work out a national standard for labeling GMO foods and go with that. So first of all, what is the Safe and Accurate Food Labeling Law?
That was a bill introduced at the federal level that would preempt state law for states like Vermont that have passed legislation to require mandatory GMO labeling. So this federal law would preempt that effort, meaning that, you know, Vermont can no longer require that labeling. So,
or any other state that decides to pass the law.
Exactly. So it's trying to step into the playing field and exclude efforts to require labeling. It also was setting up a system for voluntary labeling, but a lot of organic organizations and others who support labeling GMOs felt that it wasn't the right voluntary labeling system. If there was a voluntary labeling system in place instead of mandatory labeling, that we should really all be at the table and discussing that and thinking that through more carefully.
So this piece of legislation is sponsored by industry groups, trade groups like the Grocery Manufacturers Association, which essentially pools the efforts of many different food manufacturers like Pepsi, Cola, General Mills, and whatnot, and who essentially seem to be afraid of telling people that they have GMOs in their food. Mm-hmm. And I think particularly of somebody like Pepsi, you know, whose cola is sweetened with GMO, you know, high fructose corn syrup. If people were to know about that, they might not be so happy about buying it, the product. So rather than letting people know, they would rather not let people know. So is that why the legislation is called the DARC Act?
Well, I think that businesses are concerned about complying with a state-by-state ruling on labeling, and businesses...
Would that be like 50 pieces of chaos then?
Exactly. Businesses are looking for, you know, one way to do it. How do we do it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, give us one streamlined way to do it, not a state-by-state basis. But I think you're right in that companies, you know, they want to communicate to consumers what consumers want, and it's clear that consumers are wanting food that is healthy for them and healthy for the environment.
Is it true 90% of the consumers want that?
Right.
90%? Wow. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, today we're talking about to label or not to label genetically modified foods. Major thing happened this week. Campbell's Soup Company came out in favor of federal standards for labeling GMOs. Oh my goodness, what is this going to mean to the industry? And hey, Hank Campbell's going to join us right back.
Get this. You can earn a 5-, 6-, or 7-figure income by farming a small parcel of land in or near the city.
You can be old or young.
Rich or poor.
Married or single.
You can own land outright.
Or lease it year to year.
You can grow small fruits on prairie bench lands.
Houseplants in coastal valleys.
Flowers on steep wooded hillsides.
Vegetables in the city green belts.
And ornamentals in neighborhoods of fancy homes.
Get all the help you need to get growing at MetroFarm.com.
Get the complete guide to growing high-value specialty crops for the city at MetroFarm.com.
Get experts to look at your land and assess which crops to grow at MetroFarm.com.
Get advice on how to plan and develop your project at MetroFarm.com.
And get news about the business of farming for the city.
Yes, you can earn a 5-, 6-, or even a 7-figure income by farming high-value specialty crops on a small parcel of land in or near the city.
Grow for the money today at MetroFarm.com. That's MetroFarm.com.
Well, some call it the Safe and Accurate Food Labeling Law, and others call it the DARK Act. Kelly, what does the DARK stand for?
Denying Americans the Right to Know Act.
Denying, so some say it's a Safe and Accurate Food Labeling, and others saying it's Deny Americans the Right to Know Act. Well, we have with us also today Kelly Damewood, who is the Policy Director for California Certified Organic Farmers. Also joining us, we have Hank Campbell, who's the president of the American Council on Science and Health. Hank, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Yeah, pleasure to have you aboard. You're in New York City today?
I am in Manhattan, so
Manhattan.
By all means, mute me. My office is on Broadway, so mute me if you hear a fire engine going by, because with this traffic, it's going to take 10 minutes.
Well, that's one of the things about being in Manhattan. There's always lots of horns and sirens, right?
All the time. There's just never an end to the noise.
Never an end to that stuff. Well, welcome aboard. Now, we saw you put out a very interesting article entitled Three Reasons Campbell's Soup is Smart for Using GMO Labels. And we thought, wow, this is going to be pretty interesting. So that's why we asked you to join us today. And so here we are. And we're talking about the two big things that seem to be happening at kind of the same time here. With respect to GMO labeling, one of them is the Safe and Accurate Food Labeling Law working its way through Congress. The other is the what appears to be a major capitulation by the Campbell's Soup Company in turning away from the efforts of the Grocery Manufacturers Association to avoid labeling GMOs, to suggest that that's exactly what we need to do. And you say if they were smart for doing that, and well, so that's what we're going to pick up. But first of all, the legislation working its way through Congress, how do you see that law, Hank?
Well, you want to have some sort of normal baseline, and I do think that in the interest, you know, industry and organic groups both kind of agree that having a patchwork of state regulations is not good for anybody. So really the devil is just in the details on what should be, you know, what percentage basically is going to be counting as a GMO. And I think that's the only real difference. Arguing about who's behind it, it gets us away from the values issue of food and why food is important and why some people are concerned about food and sometimes not. And it just sort of demonizes the opposition. And I don't think that's really a constructive dialogue.
Mm-hmm. I think that's what you were talking about too, Kelly, right before the break. You were talking about the need to avoid 50 different ways of approaching this GMO labeling thing.
Right. And CCOF you know, clearly supports labeling and transparency in that effort.
Mm-hmm. And Hank, what about you? What about the idea of transparency?
I'm fine with transparency. It's just groups are against, and these are a lot of these groups for the first time ever are against a federal law, you know, for labels and things when they've been in favor of for virtually everything else. So that tells you there's a little bit more politics going on than public health. Now, if we're just thinking about a public health and maybe a, you know, kind of an ethics point of view, there's already really a template for how this has been done, and Campbell's is matching that. And that's when we talk about eggs that are grown cage-free, right? There's no law that says anybody has to produce cage-free eggs. But if you go to the largest manufacturer of these large industrial chicken coops, everybody's buying these things because the public wants it. You didn't need a government to do it. You didn't need the California state to do it. You didn't need anybody to do it except to get people to feel like ethically they were being better about their food if they knew that these chickens had some room to move. And that's done with no legislation of any kind, no lobbyists, no big organic on one side and big on nothing like that. It's all just people responding to that and the free market responding to them. And I think that's what Campbell has done. They're not changing anything about their food. They're just going to put a label on there proactively. And we can debate what the impact will be. I don't think it's going to make a huge difference in their sales because it's processed food. I don't think a lot of organic buyers are buying Campbell Soup processed food. So I don't think it's going to make a difference in that. I don't think it's that cynical, we're just going to try and grab more market share thing. I think in some sense they're hoping that they can get a few new shoppers that are going to support them, but they know they're not going to lose anybody on the pro-science side. That nobody's going to stop buying Campbell Soup because they put a GMO label on there either.
Okay, but it does seem to me like the two events are kind of at cross purposes, where you have legislation being put forth that would essentially do one thing, I guess as the acronym DARCAC would suggest, deny Americans the right to know, and the other, you know, the Campbell Soup voluntarily saying people have a right to know. And, you know, I just wonder about the impact that the Campbell Soup with its 17 labels and hundreds of different products, you know, when they put those labels on all those products and put them on the grocer's shelves, that's going to have a profound impact on the other manufacturers, don't you think?
Is it for me?
Yes, start with you.
Oh, well, they're certainly being thought leaders. This is why I wrote the article saying, you know, because it's easy. These camps get so entrenched, like organic is, you know, GMOs are bad, and you know, the scientists are like, you know, organics are dumb hippies and stuff like that. But what really is happening is Campbell's has taken a shot. They're an $8 billion company that's had flat revenue for a few years, and they're trying to see if they can move this needle into getting into a market that they really don't have much presence in because they've been stigmatized by the processed food thing. So, but they're not changing anything about the food, and the benefit for at the American Council on Science and Health, we're going to think a lot about the whole chain of society and not just people who can afford organic, but a lot of poor children out there. And in these other instances where people have said, well, we're going to remove GMOs, they end up removing a lot of nutrients, a lot of vitamins that are otherwise quite valuable to people who don't have a lot of money and can't go to a farmer's market and buy these things. And Campbell's is avoiding that. They're not going to have to take any vitamins out of their food the way Grape Nuts did and the way Cheerios did and things like that when they went GMO. It's still going to be, you know, as healthy as any processed food's going to be. So they haven't changed anything. I think that's the brilliance of it. They haven't changed anything. They've said the free market is solving this problem the same way that the egg industry solved it, by just adopting cage-free eggs without having legislation to do that. And if they get some revenue out of it, I think that's a kicker as well.
Mm-hmm. Kelly, do you think you have to lose nutrients by being GMO-free?
No, we have plenty of organic certified product that has nutrients in it, and GMOs are prohibited in organic mm-hmm. production.
And there's a lot of processed food now, too, that is coming out as organic, right? GMO-free?
Sure.
Okay, so it's kind of working both ways. So I just wanted to lay that on the table. It seems to me like two kind of earth-shaking events, if you think about it, the DARC Act, the Safe and Accurate Food Labeling Act, and the capitulation of Campbell Soup. Because, you know, the Grocery Manufacturers Association and its members have spent, you know, about $100 million fighting all of these GMO labeling laws. So there's got to be some, you know, head-scratching going on in the halls of the GMA these days. So I guess moving on, Mike, I'd like to ask you, Hank Campbell. We have a few minutes left before the break here, but what I'd like to lay on the table now is, why has science failed to sell the efficacy of GMO foods? You know, it seems like such a incredible breakthrough in science that we can, you know, split genes and graft them onto the genes of something else and make something new. It seems like such a brilliant piece of work, and what it's done for farmers, you know, it's allowed farmers to grow like 1,000 acres of plants with no bugs and no weeds. Miraculous stuff. So why has science been so unable to sell this stuff to the consuming public? What, 90% of people want to know if their food contains GMOs or something like that? I don't know what the exact number is. Does anybody know, Kelly?
I don't know the exact number, but I do know that more and more families are looking for healthier options. Over 80% of American families are looking for organic.
So when we come back from the break, that's the subject I'd like to pick up. What happened to science? Why did it not sell us on eating its goods? This is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with Kelly Damewood, who is the Policy Director of California Certified Organic Farmers, Hank Campbell, President of American Council on Science and Health, and you, 831-479-1080. Right back. Welcome back out there. Michael Olson here. A couple of years ago, I was invited to sit in on a panel at the International Biotech Convention in Chicago, speaking to those people who genetically modify foods. And my closing comment to them went something like this. I respect the technology that you have developed. I was once a teenage herbicide myself, hoed weeds in the hot sun in Montana, what you have developed is a way for farmers to grow crops with no weeds and no bugs, which has made farmers really happy and made you folks in the biotech industry very rich. But sometime down the line, you're going to have to face the fact that consumers are going to wake up and say, what's in this stuff for us other than food that has been saturated in herbicides and infused with pesticides? Now, I don't think the industry has come to grips with that yet. And that's what I wonder. Why has science failed to step up and say what we're doing is great, and, you know, that you consumers should be really grateful for having this wonderful product? So, Hank Campbell, you're president of the American Council of Science and Health. Where has science gone? Where are they?
Oh, you know, as we saw, this is some pretty bad marketing. You know, I think I lauded Campbell's for saying they should be taught in business school for decades to come for this move of theirs. And on the opposite side, you could have Monsanto's communications department for being an abject failure in that respect. But let's take a minute to go through the history of why this became controversial when it never was before. Obviously, we've done, genetic modification for 10,000 years. And it was only until the...
Well, wait a minute. To an extent, we have, yes.
Foods have been genetically modified to have more calories, to have more sweetness. Mm-hmm. Obviously, a thumb would be the size of a thumbnail.
Through cultural selection.
But we're modifying the foods. But it doesn't matter. I was just making that sort of general point that we've always known that you improve sweetness, you improve calorie, you improve things that are optimized for the soil by using the scientific method. But it was only until the discovery of radiation that we discovered that Mother Nature was also doing this, right? Mother Nature sometimes mutates things, and it's chaotic and it's random. But that promise meant that, well, why couldn't we control that specifically? One of the co-founders of the American Council on Science and Health is Dr. Norm Borlaug, who won the Nobel Peace Prize for being the father of the Green Revolution.
And saving the lives of billions.
Billions. oh my God. And this was mutagenesis, right? This was manually, controlling these kind of mutations. And now there are thousands of food lines, including eight strains of organic lettuce that were created using genetic modification. Mm-hmm. So where did we go wrong? Where mutagenesis was overwhelmingly embraced and the age of biology was getting...
When you say mutagenesis, what you're talking about is deliberately tweaking the genes so they tweak themselves into something else.
Right. And okay. This was...
That's different still than genetic engineering.
Then genetic modification. Remember, genetic modification is a legal definition and not a science one. To science, they're all flavors of the same thing. Just like RNA interference is going to be genetic modification, but it won't be a legal GMO.
Okay, fair enough.
GMOs. So we had this. So we have all these lines of foods that were created using genetic modification, and we had a wonderful proof of concept of transgenic, this GMO in Hawaii, where the papaya was basically being obliterated, and chemistry couldn't fix it, and hybrids couldn't fix it, nothing could fix it, pesticides couldn't fix it. And I did a talk with this wonderful fellow who created this technology, and this sailed through approval. There was no controversy at all because this product was going to be obliterated. 98% of the papaya was gone, and it was nature that was doing it. And he said, well, I have a solution. Basically, he got a $5,000 grant to create this transgenic papaya, which has worked perfectly. So there was a certain arrogance when the controversy first started to erupt, where Monsanto just dismissed it and said, the science is on our side, and if you don't agree, you're anti-science. And they miss the fact that food is a values issue, right? A papaya is kind of an optional thing. You can buy it or you cannot buy it, and you're going to be fine either way. But food is a values issue because I can't opt out of food. You can't opt out of food. So when you get dismissive and say, science says this is settled, the same way that, global warming settled all these other things, you're alienating people in a way where they become entrenched and say, well, if I can't opt out of it, well, then I do have all these rights. And you can't just say that scientists in some remote facility have determined this. So I think it was just very poor presentation where... Now, we'll have to see. GMOs are off patent, so Monsanto is clearly going to move on to RNA interference, and just like they moved on from mutagenesis when anybody could get into that market. So we'll have to see if the people who say they're anti-corporation or they're anti-Monsanto or whatever are really just anti-science. If they object to RNA interference the same way they objected to GMOs,
would you describe what RNA interference is for?
RNA interference is just basically stopping something from happening as opposed to replacing something. You don't want to have – some people don't think there's harm in having a genetic modification. Whereas if you just tweak a protein that can shut off or on or off, for example, you can just stop a thing from happening, and it'll have that same beneficial effect. It's really wonderful technology. It'll be as removed from GMOs as mutagenesis and hybrids are. But there's a cottage industry now built up being against conventional food, and we'll have to see if they line up against RNA.
What about my notion, and this is something that Kelly brought up with respect to the idea of GMOs is great, except for everything that goes with it. Kelly?
Right. So it's not to characterize as against conventional. It's to support a system of agriculture that considers a whole system approach. So, Michael, you referred earlier to the development of, GMO crops as, well, it's great to have no weeds and it's great to have no bugs. That's great for the farmer. Not necessarily. You need bees and you need pollinators and you need bugs, and sometimes you need certain weeds to cover crop and turn nutrients back into the soil. So what organic is looking at is a whole system approach, and it's considering what are the impacts of growing this food on public and environmental health on the long term, not just what are our immediate needs, what's an immediate solution right now without considering the other effects.
And even a little bit beyond that, I wonder why science promised that GMOs would allow us to grow crops with fewer pesticides. But in fact, that's what the whole thing is a pesticide machine, whereas, acres and acres and acres are being inundated with glyphosate, and the plants themselves are infused with a biological pesticide that kills bugs. And so what is it in that model for consumers to buy? Hello, Hank?
Oh, is it? Was it? I'm sorry.
Yeah,
Gosh, you know, I don't want to be blunt, but there was nothing in that sentence that was correct.
Oh, good.
We have far less environmental strain. Here's what I think we all want. You know, if we were really talking about labeling across the board, if we wanted transparency, we would have pesticides listed on labels.
We don't need to do that because organic is already a robust certification process that considers what materials can and cannot be used. And you can
exempt it from pesticides.
Okay, I got to hold that thought. We have to take a quick break. Michael Olson, this is The Food Chain. Right back with Kelly Damewood, Hank Campbell, and you, 831-479-1080. It's your food. Well, folks, the Campbell's Soup Company is going to voluntarily label its products containing GMOs with GMO label. As 75% of Campbell's product line, and they have 17 different brands of food, hundreds of different products on the grocer shelf, if those, you know, all those labels on the grocer shelf is bound to change the way people see food labeling, I think. I don't know. What do you think, Hank? Do you think that'll have an impact on the other manufacturers like Pepsi and Coke and those folks that use a lot of high fructose corn syrup that's been modified genetically?
If it's successful, there's always an early adopter, and that's the joke in business is sometimes pioneers get arrows in the back and sometimes they discover new ground. And that's what we're going to find out with Campbell's. It hasn't been successful. Obviously, Cheerios, you know, sales went down after they reduced GMOs. There are lots of cases where it seems, you know, there's these changes in the processed food or the kind of food processes that we're going to include in our stuff makes a difference. But if it doesn't translate into sales, it's going to go away rather quickly. They won't change the label back. Once you spend the money on the label, you just keep printing it off, and that's easy enough. I don't think that's the issue. I think they really do just want to see if there's this demand, because we see this statistic thrown around, 90% of people want GMOs, but what,
one GMO, want to know.
Want to know.
Yeah, want to know.
But not unprompted. See, this is the devil in the details that isn't included. When unprompted, what do you want to see on a label? Only 7% of people list GMOs, whereas 20% list gluten. So when unprompted, when no one gives them a hint about what they should want on a label, when they just say, out of the blue, what do you want on a label? Three times as many people will say they want to know if there's gluten in it, even though 1% of America are celiacs, right? So it's a little bit of spin happening that can be convincing to a marketing person and says, well, let's just put the label on there and we'll see if sales go up.
And speaking of marketing people, we were talking on the break with Kelly about the impact that non-GMO labels are having on organic labels. And a piece here, I think it was in the Wall Street Journal, and I quote, surging sales of foods marketed as made without genetically modified crops are outpacing sales of foods labeled with organic. And Kelly said,
we see a lot of confusion in the marketplace about what non-GMO is. We see consumers confusing non-GMO as organic and not recognizing that organic is not only non-GMO, but it's a lot more. It's about soil health. It's about biodiversity. It's about non-toxic inputs. It's about a robust system to support farmers and food manufacturers who are doing the right thing when they're producing food. So it's a constant challenge for us to communicate what organic is to consumers and how it's different than just simply non-GMO. And also, you know, we see double-digit growth and demand for organic, yet organic remains less than 1% of all agricultural land in the United States. So it's also a supply issue. More and more consumers want to buy organic for a number of reasons, and it's really up to organizations like CCOF and other advocacy organizations to help overcome barriers to organic. We see quite a few barriers in transitioning to organic, and we really want to grow the supply to meet that demand.
Hank, how did we consumers become so persnickety about food?
Well, that's why it goes back to the values issue. As we have access to more and more data, people can make more and more choices. And, you know, gosh, to Kelly's point, I support farmers and I support consumers. So I've told lots and lots of farmers in articles that they should go into organic farming if they can, because it's more profit. You know, when you have more profit and you have demand and the public wants it, you match those two things up, and this miracle in the free market happens. So anytime you have those two together, I completely support organic farmers. What I don't support is this movement to accomplish through legislative fiat what can't be done in the competitive marketplace. And that's to say, we want to penalize our competitor so that we can get an advantage for our clients. I think that's a real negative because it undermines public trust in science overall. How can we expect people to accept the science of global warming when we're going to turn around and we've got some groups saying, well, vaccines are bad for you, and, you know, doctors are on the take, big pharma controls that, and GMOs are bad for you, and big ag controls that, and they don't care about you, they're out to get you. I mean, it's just so corrosive to our understanding of science in general and technology as well when we allow people to try and penalize someone else to get a leg up that they might not get in the marketplace. Campbell's is trying to show that they can get ahead in the marketplace by doing something positive. They're not taking anything out. They're adding the label people said they should add.
And Kelly, you're out there convincing the legislators to change the laws.
Right. I mean, so I understand what you're saying about the free market, and, you know, it definitely has supported the growth of organic. But again, we're seeing such a high demand for organic, and the growth in supply of organic in the United States remains tiny. And so there has to be certain public policies at play that are inhibiting that growth. Whether it's just GMO labeling, you know, that's definitely not the only thing at play. So we're working, you know, we need more funding for organic research to develop non-GMO breeds of seeds and, you know, non-GMO methods and non-chemical based methods to controlling pests and disease. So, you know, there's a lot of different policies at work that you have to support to grow organic. You know, first and foremost, in California, we're working to streamline the paperwork and fees that producers are paying to make sure that it's a streamlined process that is more accessible to more growers so that they can, you know, see that, realize that profits that come with organic.
Okay, folks, there we are. When we get back, we're going to go to the phones. And you're invited to participate in this conversation today, to label or not to label. Will you buy Campbell's soup when it's labeled contains GMOs? Or will you say thank you, Campbell's, for being so transparent, and avoid the soup because it does contain GMOs? 831-479-1080. This is The Food Chain. Welcome back. We have a few minutes. We're going to go to the phones. We're going to pick up John. John, welcome to The Food Chain. You're talking with Kelly Damewood and Hank Campbell. Hank, are you part of Campbell's Soup Company?
I've had a few people ask that. They give me no money of any kind. I own no stock. It was just a coincidence that I don't even know if there are any Campbell's at Campbell's Soup Company.
Okay, good to go. John, fire away.
Good morning. I was wondering, are there any documented adverse things on record, attributable directly to GMO food or grain? I remember hearing some horror stories about farmers in India committing suicide because of their cattle or their crops failing.
Well, Hank, what do you think?
No, there are none of those. I mean,
there are none?
That's all been debunked. There was one study a few years ago, Gil Eric Seralini, who's basically the Andrew Wakefield of GMOs, and that was the guy who created the vaccine autism hysteria. And, you know, that was debunked. There was another study that tried to show it in Italy that was retracted this past week.
But it is important to note that some of the chemicals that are designed to be used with GMOs have been shown to have negative health effects, like glyphosate has had carcinogenic.
You know what? I think, I said this before and we had to go to a break, I'm 100% of putting pesticide labels on all foods. Now, that's going to include organic because LD50 is acute toxicity of pesticides, and if you compare
organic it, already publicly lists all the pesticides allowed in organic production.
Which is fine, but let's put them on the labels, because the acute toxicity of glyphosate is 1/3.
Are you talking, Hank, are you talking about forcing people to put stuff on the labels? Is that what I hear you saying?
I'm fine with labels, but if you're going to have transparency, have transparency about everything that goes into food.
Good to go. John, with a quick question, quick answer to your question, you might tune in next week. We hope to have Dr. Don Huber on, and he will address the issue of some of those attendant pesticides that are used with GMOs. So thanks for that call. Really appreciate it. Let's go to Don. Don, welcome to the food chain.
Hi. Well, if you just put on a label that says contains GMOs, some people are going to see it like skull and crossbones.
Well, that's what I wonder about Campbell's.
Right. So I think what they should do is say what items are GMO in their products, like contains GMO, let's say tomatoes, okay? Some people are okay with some GMOs, but not others. I happen to be one that doesn't like GMO nightshade plants like tomatoes, potatoes, things like that. Because, you know, it's taken humans a really long time to be able to adjust to eating those kinds of foods. They're called nightshades for a reason, right? So if you suddenly mess with it, you know, it could trigger some kind of event. Also, I think, you know, Campbell's should have less wheat products. You know, there's all these kind of things with this with noodles, that with noodles. They should have the same kind of soups without noodles, too. And there's hardly any vegetable soups anymore. They used to have a whole bunch, but now it's all football all the time. So it's all meat, meat, meat.
Kelly, you wanted to, you know, one of the things that I've been wondering is that the Grocery Manufacturers Association is putting out the idea of a smart label, which is a label you could scan with your cell phone, and it would tell you everything. Hank?
It's a fine idea, and, you know, I don't know anybody there, but I imagine if they're positing it, it's because most people really don't look at many labels now, and if you create another barrier to transparency, like you have to go to your cell phone and look on it, they're just not going to do it.
Trust the organic label. I say organic's the most robust, regulated, meaningful label, and that's what consumers should look to.
Kelly Damewood, Hank Campbell, thank you both for joining us. Kelly from the California Certified Organic Farmers, Hank from the American Council of Science and Health, and thank you all for tuning. Remember Michael Olson's second law of the food chain. The farther we go from the source of our food, the less control we have over what's in that food. Thank you all for tuning in.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.